This is After the Credits, the home of correct movie opinions since 2007.
Yeah.
Welcome to episode 339 of After the Credits. I am one of your co-hosts, Maureen Antunes, joined today by fellow co-hosts.
Steve Stebbing.
And Bill Harris.
Guys, how goes it?
It goes good. I was just marveling on the intro in that I'm so used to with my podcast doing video and for people to see what's going on. And there's so many great moments on this podcast that it just would have been so brilliant.
There is video. It's just not edited. Hey, if you guys don't mind putting this shit up on the internet, the show basically doesn't get edited either. It gets a bunch of audio at the beginning and the end, and then that's it. I did edit a couple of episodes, and I'm like, God, this takes too long. Even for the fact that we don't really edit ourselves. Yeah. It's just too time consuming, and we're pretty good at this anyways. We've been doing this a long time, so it just is what it is.
Oh, for sure.
Yes, today's show brought to you by Soju. Steve, what are you drinking?
Pure Leaf iced tea, the peach kind.
And Bill, I know you've got a beverage of choice.
Yeah, I'm drinking a Guinness out of a can.
Yeah.
A gentleman.
Well, like, and you're going to follow that up with some Summersby, I understand.
Yeah, I'm getting drunk this episode. I watched some really shitty movies.
Well, for this part of the podcast is the Irish Canadian king of Canadian cinema.
Yes.
Listen, I'm going to bring you Canadian content later.
Oh, nice. I have some as well that I remember that I haven't logged yet. So I got some too.
some pretty decent Canadian content, I gotta say.
Okay. I just got one, so now I feel diminished.
I have two really good ones, actually. Like, not even like meddling, like supremely good. And Steve, you've seen one of them.
Oh, good.
I know. It's gonna be
what a tease.
What a tease. Well, we'll get there in a minute.
That's what in the business we call a tease.
Oh, well, before we talk about the movie of the week, which is Bob Trevino Likes It, can we talk a little bit about the studio and how between that and what was that other HBO show, The Franchise, I think it's called?
Oh, yeah.
They're killing fucking Hollywood. The secrets are out the bag.
Taking big shots. Yeah, the Kool-Aid movie, killing Martin Scorsese's movie, is fucking hilarious.
It's the greatest moment ever.
And he just starts crying.
Right?
Oh my God, so good.
So good. The show is Altman's The Player mixed. To me, I don't know. And you might be like, no, it feels, it's got an Entourage edge to it that I really like. Maybe that's just the modern side of it, but I right away I picked up on The Player.
Yeah.
That first shot, that first like opening scene, it's not a one continuous shot, but it feels very Player like.
Yeah. That's episode two. It might be some of the best. We saw it twice. It's so fucking good.
When was the last time Sarah Pauly acted?
It's been like a decade at least.
Yeah, she's made movies, but she hasn't acted.
No. That entire thing was just genius. Who's the fucking asshole whose car is in the driveway blocking me?
I was watching it with a friend of mine. He was at my place. We were watching it, and Seth Rogen just won't shut the fuck up. He just keeps on talking. My friend's like, shut up. Yes. Shut up.
It's pretty genius. But at the same, we just happen to be watching The Franchise at the same time, which is also very, very good.
I haven't watched that one. That's the Iannucci one, right?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, I love Iannucci.
Oh, dude, they blow up the wrong fucking bridges. Honestly, it's so good. It's so good. You have to watch it. It's so good. But okay, I've already derailed us. But I thought it was fitting considering it's kind of like the end of Hollywood. But let's talk about Bob Trevino Likes It, which is the movie of the week. We were going to talk about something else.
I think it was Death of a Unicorn.
Death of a Unicorn, which I did see.
I saw it as well.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, well, you guys can talk about it. I didn't get a chance to get out to see it.
I have a feeling I know what Bill's feelings are on it.
Oh.
Cheers, buddy.
But we are talking about another one, well, because this is also a new movie. It's just opened.
Opens next week.
Oh, okay. It's even early. Look at that.
Or was it? Is it this week or did it just open?
Opens in Victoria next week. So maybe
it opened in Vancouver. I think it just opened. Yeah. Okay.
So written and directed by Tracy Lehman, starring Barbie Ferreira, John Leguizamo, and French Stewart. Oh my God, where to start with this movie?
French Stewart, chameleon.
I didn't know it was him until the credits.
That's what the crazy, like, I knew it was, heading in, but there's no way.
I recognize him, and I didn't know, I didn't realize who he was in it.
Yeah. But Jen, like, didn't pick up on it for a while.
I kind of like think of him as that voice that he always kind of did on, was it Third Rock?
Yeah.
I did not recognize him at all. And he was great. I thought he was really good.
Yeah. As like the fucking horrible human being.
Yeah.
The completely worst horrible. Person.
Horrible.
Oh, this movie is so heartbreaking. Even that opening scene is just so painful to watch.
Yeah.
So painful to watch. So the basic concept here is Barbie Ferreira is this young woman who has this very fraught relationship with her father, played by French Stewart, who tends to go into these crazy rages, I guess. Like, he disappears when he gets upset at her. And she befriends another man on Facebook who has the same name, knowing full well it's not her dad. She knows it's not him, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She looks at the info and the show. It's like, you went to, like, he has pictures and university and all that stuff. So,
but she friends him because he has the same name as her dad, sends him a message, and then it starts like this friendship between these two strangers, which might be like the sweetest thing in the universe.
Absolutely.
Like, this movie could have gone so badly so many times. Mm-hmm. So many times, like at every turn.
But it's so pure of heart.
It is.
It is so pure of heart that it, you don't even have that worry that it is going to go to a place you don't want it to go. And oh my God, emotional wallops, like two just fucking huge ones. And because I'm not too far down the Euphoria road at all, so I don't really have any context for Barbie Ferreira, but she's fucking fantastic in this film. She has such great comedic timing, and she can handle all that emotional weight with such grandeur. I don't know. I really, really liked her. It was a star-making vehicle for me, because I don't, like I said, I haven't watched that much Euphoria.
And John Leguizamo.
John Leguizamo is
pretty, so pretty great.
Always good. Always good. I'm a huge John Leguizamo mark. Have been for a long time. Long time. And to be this is the true, like a true, like inspired by the true story, which happened to the director. So
yeah,
that was just crazy.
And it's like a daddy issue movie, like a validating daddy issue movie. I feel like a lot of people feel seen with this movie.
So I weirdly feel like I'm gonna be the one that take this down a little bit. It's the two actors are so good that I think it covers up the fact that they just put a lot into like trying to get you to cry. There's a lot here, and it works. You know, you both cried. I got a little choked up, but it's just a lot. And it seems a little forced, but the actors are so good. And I was able to like kind of get away from it. Like, I'm like, okay, they're really good. This is, it's a little much, but I'll go with it. It's a good movie. I don't think it's a great movie. It's a very watchable. People will love this film. Mm-hmm. I think it'll play really well for like the Victoria audience of like gray hairs, but Esha is.
Are you making a pass at us? I do have gray hair.
I do too. Yeah. So, and a gray beard. It's a good movie. It just feels very Sundance. Does that make sense?
It totally does.
Sure, yeah. I could agree with that for sure. Yeah. For sure. This is your big marketable film at all. Hence why it's not being largely marketed.
Yeah. The local theater that it's playing here, I think it's said it's playing for a week. And then it leaves.
It gets a quick engagement, then it's gone, and then you'll be lucky if you might hear about it on streaming.
Well, I hope people get to see it, though, because I think it does. It is really I really, really liked it a lot. I see where Bill is talking about, because there is a lot here and some of it feels very manipulative. Like, I'm just thinking of that scene where she goes to the counselor for the first time and just starts talking like, you know, this is just my life. And the counselor starts crying at the end of the session because he's just so traumatized by the whole experience. Yeah. And she's just sitting there like, this is
wanting
just my
life. Help still. Yeah. Like, but like still like, oh, are you okay?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's going to be okay.
Yeah. So like, I could totally see that. And some of it is really telegraphed, but it does not detract from the fact that this movie has so much heart. Mm-hmm. And really, really like wears the emotions on its sleeve. And it at the end of the day, it's a really feel good story, even though it's really fun.
Yeah. No, the scene where he like doesn't pay for the dinner and like says he forgot his like wallet made me think of my father. Hi, Dad. I think that Barbie Ferreira, given the right role, could be a star. She should have like a Netflix like Reese Witherspoon movie where she gets to shine and people get to see her, because a lot of people aren't watching Euphoria, like unless you're in a certain age group, and she's really good on Euphoria. Yeah. But I think that it's a very small movie, and I think you should probably try to find it. I'm a little lower on it, but I still think it's a pretty good movie. So, you know, we need films like this. It can't all just be Marvel.
Well, and I mean, it's a movie that does, I like that it kind of leans up against some of these preconceptions of what we have about like online relationships. Like Leguizamo's wife says, are you sure she's not catfishing you for money?
That's funny.
Yeah, and like everybody keeps asking her, like, are you sure he's not like some child molester because he's this much older man? I love how they keep touching on these things that would come to mind if you were to think about them in any for like 2 seconds.
Well,
and they address them.
It's the reality of the situation, because there is a reality of that in this day and age it could be anyone. And I like when the wife asks Leguizamo if he's getting cat, there's a moment where he's like, what? No, like what? Like he thinks
yeah, like maybe I am. Like,
yeah. So that's it's funny. And it also comes down to like the nuance that these actors are able to bring to the role. The wife I thought was great as well, because she's kind of like dormant for a lot of the movie and then has like her like time to shine at the end of the film.
I actually thought for a while she was kind of a bitch, for lack of a better word. Like, she seems totally removed from the reality of their situation. Like, she's like, I want to go and spend a couple of $100 on some like scrapbooking paper for like, he's clearly, and he's like, well, you know, we really can't afford it. And she kind of just gives him the puppy dog eyes, like, please. And I couldn't help but think, what a snot.
Well, they're both are lost in their own things, right? He's lost in going back to the office all the time.
Yeah, because they're both like completely broken.
Exactly. Yeah, and Lily breaks him out.
Yeah. But I love that you don't find that out until the like much further on in the story. And then you kind of reevaluate, you know, where these characters are coming from.
I mean, a lot of the reveals, I don't know, as far as spoiler territory we're gonna get into here, but like the reveal that Lily's mom was an addict that died of an overdose. And I mean, what effect that has on a daughter as well.
Like this is the kind of movie this is. Like a certain film, their first visit would be, you know, the guy would be creepy. Instead, he buys her tools to fix her house.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of movie it is. Like, they're just being nice to each other.
Nice. Yeah.
Like, it's
in this world right now where when you scroll through local and world international news and it's just like doom, it's really nice to have a film like that, even with what happens in the third act. It's still nice at the end of it. It still feels nice. And that scene with the dog is everything. Like, holy shit.
I don't know. The scrapbook at the end just fucking broke me.
Yeah, I know. So yeah, that's the one. That's the one. And I don't want to. That's the big spoiler one, I think. But the first one that nails you is that dog. The dog scene is just like to deprive somebody of the joy of having.
I don't know, but I understand. I'm afraid of dogs. So I was like, you go, girl. Like, you cry that dog. I hate dogs.
That exchange with her dad when she finally, like, lets her out. The whole rage thing, the when they go to the rage thing.
Yeah.
And her colleague or boss or friend or all of the above says, is it bad that I'm mad at you for not being able to be angry? And then they go back and she breaks the shit out of everything after that exchange with her dad.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. The tally thing that he made.
Oh my God. How fucking low.
I couldn't believe it. I was shocked at that scene.
Yeah.
I was shocked.
I mean, the reality of it is, I mean, I said to Dan later, I probably know people that I could see doing that. Yeah, like, they're like so much petty.
How I gave up for you.
Ugh. She's like, is this a tally of everything you've ever bought me? Formula? Like, are you real?
Yeah.
Like, dude.
Hardcore. Yeah, I don't know. I really like it. I would recommend it.
Me too. I think it can be a really hard watch, but at the end of the day, even though it's super sad, it's very life reaffirming.
Yeah, and I think you're going to talk about it after seeing it too. I think it is one of those movies, and maybe because it's so nice.
Why was John Leguizamo not a bigger star?
Because he talks politics.
Does he?
Because he talks race politics and stuff, and that scares people.
No, I had no idea.
Yeah.
No, neither did I.
He's really good.
Yeah, he is really, really, really great. Yeah. And he's always underrated, perpetually underrated. And I know how you feel, Bill.
Yeah, I think Michael Peña took those roles after that, like pretty much.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got one this week with him too.
Nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not nice, but anyway.
So at the end of the day, we all liked, to some extent, Bob Trevino likes it.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah.
And we recommend it.
Yeah.
See it if you can.
Right now, it's in the top 10. But think of how far we are into the year, though.
Very true.
Was it really a good movie if Steve didn't say it's one of the best films of the year?
Yes.
Stop using my hyperbole against me.
Just a thought.
Stop it. A good movie.
Stop it.
Okay, so why don't you guys share a little bit about the other movie that was in the running for the movie of the week?
Wow. Oh, Death of a Unicorn? Do you want to rock with that one right now?
Go for it.
Okay, so I went to see it with my buddy. My buddy did not like it. Did not like it at all. I came off on the okay, so like 3 out of 5. Because I just, it feels a little toothless consistently. I do like all the Eat the Rich digs they're doing, but they just don't dig far enough.
Yeah, no, and I like the initial idea. Just as you said, it's toothless. It has nothing after like a certain amount of the film. Like, it's just like you just ran out of ideas, and it's just like you're just going for the end now, and there's just nothing there.
And in a year where we've already gotten Companion and Hard Eyes and The Monkey and stuff, it feels so lesser than any of those films as far as genre films in that kind of vein go. why did I keep thinking about Dinner for Schmucks when I was watching this movie? I don't know why. Every time I was seeing Paul Rudd, I was keep thinking Dinner for Schmucks, which is arguably Paul Rudd's worst movie he's ever done.
Oh, easily. Yeah. That and Ant-Man 2. So really kind of a fun idea. Like they're a father and a daughter are going towards a retreat for her dad's work, and they hit a unicorn with their car.
Yeah.
And you know, the hijinks ensues. Like it's like,
and so as far as the descent into, which is also kind of like has a finite end and the toothlessness to it, the search for the beyond through this unicorn horn,
yeah,
which in the end doesn't even feel like enough. I honestly though I will say that I laughed really hard at that she's like has the unicorn horn and like cascading through this thing in the beginning, and then also she just gets sprayed with blood as Paul Rudd's bludgeoning this unicorn, and I was like, that was funny, and it's a really funny way to get to the title card. I thought that was really, really great. And as things that I thought were great in it, I'll always love Richard E. Grant.
He
kind of has two performances in this movie that are both equally so much fun. Like the dying Richard E. Grant is hilarious. There's some really funny stuff in there. Will Poulter.
He's fun.
He's so much fun, especially where his character goes in this film. It's really nice to see Taya Leone again.
Yeah, I can't. I was trying to remember the last time I saw her in a film TV. It's been a while. Yeah.
I think that her show, that Madam Secretary, I think that was the last time. And she had that show for like 6 years, right? So 6 years, 23 episodes a year or whatever. She just probably took a little break. But like the dominoes were there as far as the family goes set up. It just wasn't enough.
Yeah. And this is going to sound weird, but it's an A24 film, so I kind of expected it to be a little bit weirder, maybe.
And it was more Hollywood.
Yeah,
Hollywood.
Yeah, like it felt like a studio film.
Anthony, what's his name? Anthony Carrigan.
Yeah,
hilarious still. Yeah. Hilarious. Soho Hank. So still so funny.
I kind of wish Jenna Ortega would play a different character.
She's kind of the same.
Every movie.
She was. This is the Beetlejuice character again.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? And like it's like goth teenager who just doesn't know what she's doing with life or something.
Yeah,
it's just every film it's the same thing.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's I was really disappointed with this one. I thought it just ran out of steam after maybe 40 minutes.
Yeah. It feels a lot longer than it really is.
Oh,
the movie is 1 hour 44. And it kind of feels relentless a little bit in the end, like,
and they try to bring in this, like some mythology stuff that it's like
that never lands.
No, it
never, because it's never clear. It's very muddled.
It's like these giant paintings, and it's like people getting stabbed with unicorn horns, and Jenna Ortega's trying to explain this mythology, and it's like, oh, this I don't care.
And even like this whole fair maiden thing, like that, it isn't even like it's not, and none of it's clear. Like,
yeah.
When they're trying to build this kind of like depth in the story, it just that doesn't work.
Yeah. When Will Poulter is getting all like, I want to be smart, that was pretty funny.
I don't know how spoiler we want to go with our talking, but there's some really funny stuff with him.
Yeah. He's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it worth going to a free screening?
I wouldn't.
If it's, I don't know. If it's free,
will Dan hate me afterwards?
Yeah,
it's question.
That this seems like a VOD in 2 weeks kind of movie.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay,
maybe
I'm gonna wait.
Maybe save the ticket for something else.
Yeah, no, I think I might skip the screening.
I'll tell you one thing you shouldn't save, because I'm just gonna skip a couple. I'll go back to them, but one thing, because I figure we're done about talking about this guy.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. One thing don't use your ticket on is Alto Nights. Definitely. Never.
Guys, did you really think that looked good though? It looked fucking terrible.
No, I don't know. I really don't know. I didn't know.
The trailer is pretty.
Before, yeah, the trailer's interesting. The fact that Nick Pelleggi wrote it. But I forgot, or I didn't know, that this is a script that's been, this is a story that's been floating around to be made for like decades. It's like a passion project that's been passed around, and now it's David Zaslav's like passion project to get out. So automatically I'm like, okay, so this movie came out instead of Batgirl. Okay, well, let's look at it like that. Yeah. Right. Which, I don't know. I want to see Batgirl still. And after this, I mean, it's, this movie is so fucking horrendously put together. It is like frustratingly vague by trying telling story through like narration and crime scene photos and shit. It feels just like the loosest haphazard movie. And there's one scene that has like digital squibs for a big like action for a big shootout sequence, and I almost fucking yelled boo. Like, it looked so bad too, though. It looked so terrible. And De Niro's double performances, I mean, one of them is just essentially De Niro with face makeup on, and the other one, he's like mimicking Joe Pesci kind of with some of the worst nonsense banter between him and his three guys. Cosmo Jarvis looks like he has a horrible neck injury the whole movie. Like, I don't know what's going on with him. He's got a bad neck injury and like a puffy neck or something. He looks awful in this movie. And like, yeah, I don't know what Barry Levinson could be, any director in this film. It was just dull as fuck. And do you remember Barry Levinson did a horror film?
I remember he did Get Shorty.
Yeah. That was a good movie, though.
That's a really good movie.
I watched that movie not too long ago.
Yeah, and that movie is good because Elmore Leonard is good.
Yeah, that's fair.
Two things about Alto Nights. I was like 2 or 3 hours away from seeing it, and I saw Steve's 1-star review on Letterboxd and quietly didn't go see Alto Nights.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Secondly, I listened to a podcast, the Big Picture, where they had a show on what they called Garbage Scorsese. Movies that are like trying to be a Scorsese, but just don't quite get there.
Yeah. Wasn't this one billed as featuring two of the three guys?
Exactly.
Yeah, Casino, Goodfellas, and The Irishman.
So here's the thing. I know Maria is a fan of this film. So during this Garbage Scorsese podcast, where they were trying to tell us all these other movies that were Garbage Scorsese, somebody nominated Casino.
Fuck off.
A Scorsese film, saying it was Garbage Scorsese.
No, who is this person, and where do I send my hate mail? Yeah,
that is a garbage opinion.
Yeah, I did not agree with that one.
No, that's a horrible.
It's definitely not his best film, but at the same time, it's still pretty damn good at times.
It's better than most people's other movies, let's be honest.
So yeah, I don't think I'll be seeing Alto Nights. Thank you, Steve. Yeah, I appreciate it.
No problem.
Pick one for the team, dude. Wow.
Barry Levinson's horror film was called The Bay.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I remember this one.
I did not
hate The Bay.
Yeah, I've heard it's actually pretty good. Yeah.
Is it found footage? Very low budget found footage.
From Barry Levinson?
Yeah.
Barry Levinson?
It's actually really interesting. I would recommend it. I liked it.
So don't worry, Steve. I also took one for the team this episode.
Good. Let's talk about this now, actually, because I think we've both seen Holland.
Oh my God, Holland. Holland.
Is this the movie you're talking about?
I took another one.
Fuck me, dude. Holland is fucking terrible.
Oh my God. So does any plot thread in this movie actually like come to some sort of conclusion?
I still don't know what I watched.
No, it is maybe the worst film I've seen in like 2 or 3 years.
I don't know how Mimi Cave made this. Like, did she make a movie and they edited something else out of the footage that she had? Because this makes no sense, and I don't understand how anybody would have read the script and gone, yeah, this movie totally makes sense.
No, it just feels like they reshot the whole film and didn't like have any kind of continuity.
It's horrible.
Like in the first like 5 minutes of the film, there's like 4 or 5 plot threads that you think are going to like pay off, and they don't. There's a thing about food. There's a thing about the sun, and it's just like nothing. It's just all over the place.
And that ending is so bad. It answers nothing. It makes no sense. It's and then it still tries to like it almost feels like it's getting at like another conspiracy theory thing from the movie that they don't actually dig into. Like, did they move to Holland because she knew he was a serial killer and they were trying to make him straight? That's kind of what they hinted at. Spoiler, it makes no sense.
Spoiler, but fuck you for watching this film out to be told you not to. Like, it's that so bad, guys. It is that bad. Yeah, no, and also fuck you for like just destroying my boy Gael Garcia Bernal.
And the thing is, he and Kidman are not always terrible. Like, the movie is terrible and the script is pretty bad. They actually have pretty decent chemistry. I just wish that it was in another movie because nobody's going to see this. It's so terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it should be buried because it is really that bad. And I cannot believe Mimi Cave directed this after Fresh. Like, it just makes no conceivable sense to me.
For that film to be kind of like a film that like surprised us all for being kind of original and not really knowing where it's going. And
actually really good.
This is the exact opposite.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's
that's a bummer.
I think you're being nice. I think this might be one of Nicole Kidman's worst performances.
Oh, I fully agree with that. I think it is one of her.
And also screw you for taking down Matthew McFadyen too. Like, he's
no kidding.
Incredible.
No kidding. He does make a pretty decent bad guy though. Like, I do like, I would love to see him as like a legit serial killer. I think he'd be really good in a good movie.
I want to see that movie where he like does model trains and shit, but like, it's like, this other movie where they're in this town where they like, it's all about like, what is with the Holland thing where they're all dressing up and
I thought it was about a cult. It's not even about that. It doesn't know what it is.
Then explain it.
Yeah, that would be the logical thing.
Oh, so bad. And Melissa's not here, but she lasted 20 minutes and she was smart. I watched this whole damn thing. And yeah, I didn't
realize it was Mimi Cave. That's so sad.
Yeah.
It is very sad. I mean, I do want to give a props because at some point Nicole Kidman in an interview said that she realized that the reason, like, if she wanted to work with female directors, she had to basically like give them the opportunity to work with her. And so she's been actively looking for projects from female creators, which I really, really appreciate. I just hope that the rest of them are better because this is so bad.
Being a Celine Song movie.
Yeah. Well, but the thing is, and that's the thing. I mean, Fresh was really good. On the surface, this sounded like a really great idea and concept. You have Kidman, Bernal, and McFadden in a movie that looks kind of creepy and maybe a little culty, and then you go and fuck the whole thing up. Like, I still don't know who's responsible for producing this shit. It's so terrible all around.
So Steve, watch the next episode and tell us how bad it is.
Okay. Yeah. Please. Yeah. I'm rushing to get to it right now.
Yeah, totally.
I cannot believe you watched something worse, Bill.
Yeah.
I didn't watch something worse than Holland. I think Holland's just another level. Okay. But I watched two other films that were just like 0.0005 above it. Yeah.
Listen, do you want to unload some of your other titles, or Steve, do you want to go first? Do you guys want me to go first?
Steve can finish.
Did I talk about that I saw Electric State?
No.
What did you think of this piece of shit?
I mean, I was expecting a lot worse, but I don't think it's good by any measure whatsoever. I was entertained from time to time. Nobody prepared for me for how terrible Stanley Tucci is in this movie, though.
We told you the movie was bad.
I know, but you didn't say that the Tucci was bad. Because, like, that was bad Tucci, man. Like, some really bad stuff. And, like, Giancarlo doing a fucking villain again, like, dude, get a new agent, man, because you're doing the same stuff over and over again. Even if you
Giancarlo needs his Bob Trevino likes it.
Yeah. 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 Why the fuck not?
Yeah.
Feel good movie.
Yeah.
Magazine Dreams, I thought was the real fucking deal. Like, that is a solid film that Jonathan Majors carries on his shitty shoulders from start to finish. Like, holy fuck, what a performance. It was I also kind of got like a Requiem for a Dream sort of vibe from this film, as well as like kind of like the modern degradation of life and how you're starting at this precarious position and you teeter off into the unknown of bad, bad, bad shit.
I was talking to a friend about it. And he said Taxi Driver.
A little bit, yeah. But through like an Aronofsky type of filter almost.
Yeah, that's cool.
The director, Elijah Bynum, very interesting filmmaker. So it just sucks that Jonathan Majors is a shitty human being, because this would have been a movie that would have really been a very good piece for his career.
Do you think he can rescue himself? I saw that he also did. I think it was a GQ cover story.
Yeah,
which I did read part of. I haven't finished it, but
in the Voight Gibson Stallone Hollywood, yes. In the reality, the actual factual Hollywood, no. I don't think he's as far a pariah as like Kevin Spacey, but I don't think he's looked upon well. I don't think financiers are super at the bit cans about films that feature him. Hence why Magazine Dreams has this small of a release. And it was last year when it was not last, because it came it showed at Sundance in 2023, I think.
Yeah.
And then was bought by Searchlight. And then Searchlight shelved it after the allegations and then the court case. And then they dropped it outright in January 2024. And then Briarcliff picked it up to release it.
I haven't seen any kind of totals, but I can't see it doing any kind of business.
No.
I still want to see it.
It's a great film. Yeah, it's a really, really, really great film. So I also finally caught up with Agnieszka Holland's Green Border.
This movie
is like being kicked in the face and then just like repeatedly kicked in the stomach over and over again. Like it's hard as fuck. And because it's real, this is the harsh reality of asylum seekers on the Polish border.
And it doesn't help that it was like they were playing soccer with them, like, and they were the soccer ball, this kicking them between the borders. Like, it's awful.
It's so horrific to watch. And, you know, to see people turn on other people like within Poland and stuff like that. And, I mean, there's so much inner strife within that country as well, dealing with the refugees and everything. It's just hard. It's just a hard, hard subject, and nobody tells these better than Agnieszka Holland. Really, she's just so equipped to do these stories.
Well, luckily you didn't have to go and see another movie at VIFF after watching that, because I was just like, well, I have a movie in a half hour. Shit.
Yeah, your motivation to like book it for the next movie probably wouldn't be there. This is hard.
Like the trooper that I am, I went and saw the other movie.
Of course you did.
Because I'm that guy. But yeah, tough flick.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So now I'm into the territory where I got to remember them because I don't have them written down. Freaky Tales. I got to see
Fleck and Bowden.
Yes. I had no idea it was them until the end credits.
Yeah.
I had no clue. It does not feel like one of their films whatsoever. And I don't know. I had to let this one wash over me a little bit. It kind of has to make its appeal with remembering the type of films that it's trying to emulate. And that's this kind of like 90, like early 90s, kind of like cheese ball, like stories of the street, you know, just random urban legends and like a little bit of Troma, like a little tiny bit of Troma flavor to it.
Nothing wrong with that.
Because the first act features a fight between punks and Nazis, and it's like fucking great. But the whole point of this movie is to celebrate Oakland, and I kind of love an intersecting anthology story, so it gets me there. And the cool neon effects and stuff get me. I feel like I wanted a little bit more from it. It's a solid 3 all day. I just felt like I wanted a bit more over the top grindhouse, I think, to it, and I just didn't really get it. Also, so then I saw, I just remember now.
From a guy who doesn't do letterbox properly, Steve, update your letterbox.
I know, right? I'm so behind. I'm so behind. Okay. So speaking of the new trifecta that's taking over Hollywood, which is which is John Voight, who was in Megalopolis last year. So let's put that in context. Mel Gibson, who just had Flight Risk come out, which did so well at the box office, as we all know. Sylvester Stallone gets in on the game this weekend by writing a film with David Ayer for his reunion with Jason Statham for A Working Man, which has the very original story of a man working construction that actually has a past as a special ops killer.
Of course he does.
Yeah, no, this is original. We've never seen this before. This is all new. So when his boss's daughter is kidnapped, he has to go retrieve her from the hands of human traffickers. And in every Sound of Freedom fan's personal nightmare, the most boring of can't even really see it that well, John Wick action ensues. This movie is just not good. This is all sorts of not good. Remember, we're talking about Michael Pena. He's the aforementioned boss that Statham's trying to get the daughter back for.
But he's reunited with David Ayer.
Yes, for End of Watch, which is actually a solid fucking movie, in my opinion.
I like End of Watch as well, but Michael Ayer does not have the best track record. Let's be honest.
I enjoyed The Beekeeper a little bit.
I was going to say, does it have Beekeeper-isms in it?
No.
That sucks.
Oh, no, there's construction jokes.
Is there?
In it. Okay. Construction puns and stuff.
I remember when Jason Statham was in Good Stuff. Really silly Good Stuff.
Yeah, like the first two Transporter movies. At least the first one.
Yeah, no.
First one.
Solidly entertaining.
Yeah. Second movie is like an hour and 15 minutes long. It's so short.
You don't need to be any longer than that.
You're at that plane scene before you know it, where it's twirling through the air and he's...
I've been doing a lot of rewatching of my Blu-rays because I have a ton of Blu-rays and never watched them. So I thought, decided to watch them. And I watched this little Michael Mann film called Collateral. You might have heard of it.
Oh, hell yeah.
I don't know
4K.
What you're talking about.
Jason Statham's in Collateral. I did not remember that.
Is he?
Right at the beginning of the movie, Tom Cruise is in an airport and he switches briefcases with a guy.
Yep.
It's Jason Statham. Yeah.
That movie is a solid, like... coming from a Tom Cruise super fan, that movie is killer.
That's one of my favorite Tom Cruise performances.
It is, because it is one of the best Tom Cruise performances.
It's so goddamn good. Tom Cruise as a villain is so compelling.
Yeah. I also kind of like the really early shitty digital photography in it. It's a grainy mess because the digital is so terrible. And it kind of works.
It does actually work. I fully agree.
He does Vice after, right? 2 years after is Miami Vice, because 2004 is Collateral and then 2006 is Miami Vice.
Yeah.
If I'm remembering correctly.
That sounds about
and
right.
Miami Vice is fucking polished. It's like, as far as its look, it is clear and pristine. So is, sadly, Public Enemies is so clear and precise. And you're like, but these are Tommy Gunn holding gangsters. Like,
yeah.
I don't want to see it this clean and clear. Yeah. What are you doing? What was he doing? Like, even that, even for Ferrari to look like it looked, like, what the fuck, man?
Ferrari was a choice.
Yeah. I mean, me and my dad went to see that movie and we were just like,
it's not good.
Was that?
It's not good. That VFX accident scene is still bad. There's no other way to put it. It's just bad.
No. Okay. And then today I watched Sacramento, which this one isn't out until April 11th. This is Michael Angarano's second feature film. His first one is called Avenue and it's on Tubi. It's got like Nicholas Braun and Ari Grainer and a bunch of other people. So I think I might check it out because I am interviewing him and Michael Cera tomorrow morning.
Wow.
About the film. Yeah. I enjoyed it. It's an estranged buddy road trip. So it is the fact that it's coming out within.
Wait. How is Kristen Stewart not on your interview list?
Come on. She wasn't offered up. It was Michael Cera and Michael Angarano together and Maya Erskine.
Sorry, I was just looking it up and I'm like, fuck, Kristen Stewart's in this?
Yeah, Kristen Stewart's
I'm definitely watching up.
Yeah, it's funny because it's all people, like, it's all people's connections to each other. So Michael Angarano and Maya Erskine are married. Which nice. I didn't know. I'm pretty new to her right now. So I really dug it. The fact that it's coming out within 6 months of A Real Pain, I think kind of brings the damaged, estranged relationships between men stories. And this is also one of those films that men will do anything except get therapy movies. You know what I mean? Like that, like even like Michael Angarano's character in it, he goes to therapy, but he's doing it wrong. You know what I mean? Like he's trying to solve other people's problems within therapy. So
I was going to say, how do you do therapy wrong?
there is clearly ways to do it wrong and he's doing it right. But I don't know. It's great chemistry. I still adore Michael Cera so much. And I adore all of the cast in this one. I'm excited to talk to them about it tomorrow. And then literally probably an hour before the podcast, I watched a movie called The Friend with Naomi Watts and Bill Murray.
Oh, the dog movie.
Yes. And it fucking rocked me too. It's a really, really, really great film. Naomi Watts is fucking fantastic. She is such a great actress. And I love that she keeps reminding you of that. And she's aging beautifully too. I really kind of felt, because her character is older in this, so I like felt like she's like now gracefully in that period. And I loved it, and holy fuck, that dog's huge. Danes are just so damn big. And she even brought that dog on the Tonight Show recently, like just a couple days ago, so I thought that was kind of funny. But a really good film, and like a classy adult dog film. Like, usually these ones are like so like schmaltz, manipulative and aimed. Like, you feel the cheesiness of it. You feel the family film filter on it. And this film doesn't have that. It's just like a classy, well-written drama about grief, especially grief and mentorship and everything, and having a close relationship in that way. And how it affects a writer's ability, essentially. So I really dug this film. It's still rolling around in my brain as I just finished it, but I dug it.
Best doc performance since Anatomy of a Fall, according to one Letterboxd user.
It's a really soulful performance from this dog, for sure.
I'm just adding shit to my watch list. Like, this is getting out of hand, guys.
Well, now it's Bill's turn, so.
All right, Marina, I think I might have to ruin this streak for you here. I got some shit.
All right, bring me some shit. Don't really, but you know.
Do you guys remember when Harmony Korine was like one of the best up and coming filmmakers?
When he made Spring Breakers.
Yeah, that was it. No, like, I love Gummo.
I don't. Yeah. Spring Breakers is where Harmony Korine starts and stops for me.
And I love Beach Bum.
Like, Beach Bum's fun. It's Beach awesome. Bum's fun, yeah.
But not then he lost his goddamn mind.
It's the Travis Scott thing, isn't it?
He decided that he was going to reshape the future of Hollywood in some bizarre, fucked up way. And he's been making crap ever since.
Yeah, it's true.
So his latest film, Baby Invasion.
Oh, you got to see this movie?
Oh, my God. Do you want the link?
Yeah, might as well.
Can I talk you out of it?
Yeah, okay, let's do it.
Have you ever thought of a movie as like an Instagram live with photosensitivity things going on in the background and everybody's wearing a Instagram filter on their head of a baby head?
No.
So the plot is that there's this video game called Baby Invasion that gets stolen. And it's so immersive that people get lost in it and it hits the black market and people are going around in real life playing the game and they invade houses and steal shit. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I'm just looking at Letterboxd has become my obsession. Guys, this actually has a rating of 3.2 and IndieWire gave it a favorable review. What the fuck?
Oh, was it Ehrlich?
Probably. And also the lead cast member is anonymous.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry, what?
So yeah, it's and not only that, when they walk in the room, the filter thing doesn't come on right away, so their faces are blurred, and then it goes like a video game thing where it says like +10 hearts or some shit. It's so all over the place and has no idea what it's doing. And I honestly think he's lost his mind. Like to think that Aggro Drift was even worse than this. Like this is a step up because I could actually watch this. Like Aggro Drift was unwatchable. Like the screen,
it was horrible.
Like just like the infrared stuff was just unwatchable. At least like this is like a kind of a coherent vision of what he wants to do. But at the same time, it's just awful. Almost as bad as Holland, but not quite as bad as Holland. And Odessa was just as bad as Baby Invasion.
Oh, I saw the trailer for Odessa. I was curious of it because it showed up on the feed for Disney Plus. I watched the trailer and I was like, that's not fucking happening.
No.
It's awful.
Yeah,
the trailer looks awful.
The songs are just incredibly terrible. I actually didn't see the whole entire film, so I can't tell you what happened. But I lasted about 25 minutes, maybe. And it had more than enough. And I don't turn films off. Like this was just, I didn't turn Baby Invasion off or Holland. Like this, it's really bad. And it's too bad because I think Sadie Sink is a decent talent. I think she's quite decent in other things. But man, like do not watch
The Whale.
Odessa. Yeah, Whale, which I didn't like, but I thought she was good in it. This is the one that I took for the team because I don't think anybody saw Snow White.
Oh, nope. Dude, I did.
Did you?
I did.
Oh.
And we are going to have disagreements.
So you liked it?
You go ahead.
I didn't think it was terrible.
Yeah.
It's just incredibly
bland.
Bland. Like, why was it even made?
So Dan,
other than the money aspect of it, but it didn't even make money.
And it won't. No.
And they spent so much money on it with reshoots and everything too. So,
well, so this is, I think it's misconceived in a number of ways. I don't think they could have expected the trash fire that happened with the media. That was not something that I think they could control. I think they could have done a better job of mitigating it. But at the end of the day, it just is what it is. I didn't actually think it was as bad as most people think it is or say it is. I still think it was really misconceived. I actually liked the songs. This is the first of the Disney live action movies that did not piss me off and where some of the songs actually worked for me. I thought that... the two that I liked was Waiting on a Wish, I think, is actually a really great song. And Princess Problems made me laugh so hard. Probably not for the right reasons, but I still think it was really effective. I didn't hate it. I just was also super underwhelmed because I think that there was an opportunity to make a decent movie and it just, this isn't it.
And do you know why it was kind of watchable? Because Rachel Zegler is kind of a star.
She is. She's a huge star.
She's getting so much hate right now. And it's so sad because it's blind hate. It's just hate.
It is.
Or hate.
She's a lot better than this film.
She is much better than this film. And she has an amazing voice. She can really, really sing. Gal Gadot is fucking terrible.
Dude, she sings two songs.
The costume design is horrible. The design of her character altogether is terrible. It's just so bad from beginning to end. The decision to make the dwarves CG is just horrible.
Oh, and if I wanted Robin Hood in my Snow White movie,
this is the, I was gonna bring that up. It just doesn't work. It has a lot of problems. I still did not hate it. I thought it was fine. I like some of the songs. I just wish the talent was used to a better ending. Because I mean, Chris Mark Webb is a good director. The music I thought was good. The cinematography, Mandy Moore did a great job. I am still trying to wrap my brain around the fact that this is written by the same woman that wrote Fur and Secretary.
Really? Like,
yes. Erin Kressier Wilson wrote this. It's shocking.
That's a little strange.
Yeah. Fur is one of those movies that I was working at the video store at the time that came out, and it was like, you want to see something a little weird?
Secretary
already had indie buzz behind it. Fur, yeah. There was like nothing behind it. Nobody was fucking talking about it. But Shane Berg is a fucking great director.
Yeah. So I don't know. Out of the live action Disney movies, which isn't saying a lot, guys, so go with me here. Mm. It is the second best of the batch.
What's the first?
Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast.
No.
Yes.
No.
I'm struggling to figure like what I would actually have Aladdin, as my number
Aladdin,
one.
Aladdin wasn't bad either. So this might be the third.
No.
Fucking why Guy Ritchie? I don't even know. It's still to this day, I don't get like we're gonna make Aladdin. Let's get Guy Ritchie.
Listen, nobody understands Disney. Disney doesn't understand Disney.
I took a buddy of mine needed me to babysit a couple of his kids, and I took them to see Snow White, and they liked it, but they weren't like they had just saw like
their most favorite thing ever,
the original one or something like that. Yeah. Like it's they're like, oh, that was okay.
Yeah,
I was just like, all right, they don't have you.
It's not good.
No,
I'm not going to defend it beyond that. But I also don't think it's the worst thing.
No, like I'd rather watch this than Wicked.
Yes, 110%.
Yeah,
and I think the music here is better than the music in Wicked, to be totally honest. But then that's just me. I am also not a musical nerd, so.
My number one might be Jungle Book.
Wow.
Sure.
Favreau's Jungle Book.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought they all kind of blew, but that's just me.
I'm trying to make cream corn out of crap right now. Okay. So
yeah. Okay. So After Steve kind of gave it an okay to like goodish review, I watched Last Breath and it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, right? Not right. Bad. So the melodrama doesn't really work, but
no, but like
everything else is okay. Yeah, and like bad. There's parts where you're like, like, oh no. And, like, it manages to do that. And I think it's Alex Parkinson. I think it's just his ability to, he knows the story and he knows what's going to get you to jump. And
it's also like, thank you. I already knew I wasn't ever going to do that before. And now I just know for a fact I'm never going to do that.
Like, I'm going to live with these three sweaty dudes in a decompression time. Like, fuck yeah. You.
Yeah, decompression freaks not. Me out.
Das Boot as well, yeah. But like, no, I probably saw License to Kill first. So that's the one where the guy blows up in the pressure chamber.
Yeah
I was like, ooh. That's why the Titan sub thing freaks me out so much.
So I know Steve hasn't seen this, but Adolescence kind of feels like one of those like once in like 10 years holy shit miniseries that is going to destroy at the Emmys
just for good reason.
Completely incredible filmmaking. The first episode is very tense, then the second episode ramps it down a little bit, then the third episode is the best episode of television I've seen maybe ever. My God.
That finale is just...
It's just a psychologist and a little kid in a room going at it.
Oh, God. Those scenes are
and it
so,
is
so
intense.
Hard to watch.
Tense. It is just riveting. And my God, that guy, I forget his name, but my God, he is incredible. And the psychologist is great. And Stephen Graham's great. Everybody's great. And... The last episode is a lot more calm, but way more heartbreaking. Yeah. Especially there's a phone call made, and it's like just crushing. Just what can happen to a family if like one little thing goes wrong? But it's not really little, but it's just incredible filmmaking, and the fact that it's on Netflix and everybody is actually seeing it. It's just the icing on the cake. Like, it's just...
My dad asked me about it. He's like, have you seen this thing? They were talking about it on the Portuguese news. Is it out already? I'm like, yeah, Dad, it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
I think it's worth mentioning. I will dig up the article because I think it is important. I felt the same way. I thought this was probably one of the most prescient bits of entertainment that we've seen, if you could call it entertainment, that we've seen in a really, really long time. I saw an article where someone was talking about the fact that we need to be cognizant that we never see the women's story. The girl's name is never mentioned. It still glosses over the fact that this is violence against women. And I understand that that is not the key messaging of this story, but it is at the very core of it as well. And it's important to realize that in all of this, that's still overlooked. There have been discussions about doing a second season, and I hope that if they do, that they maybe look at that side of the story as well. This is like so important because it's something we don't talk about. Like, we talk about how social media and, you know, what kids do on their phones or on their tablets is something that a lot of parents are tuned out of. And it is so easy to overlook because your kid is at home. They're not on the street doing some bullshit, right? They're at home in their bedroom watching whatever. And it's so easy to overlook that. And I'm just really cognizant of that because we have three nieces kind of in that age group that like all they do is be on their tablets.
There's
and
a
it's
scene,
really fucking scary.
There's a scene where the kid explains Instagram to his dad.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. Jeez. And these individuals that call themselves men are just like the scum of the earth. Like, there is no worse human on this earth, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
It's just infuriating that anybody and the algorithms and the social media platforms are all the worse for giving these people. Like, the algorithm just feeds more of this bullshit. It's really sad and really scary. So yes, see Adolescence. It is not only some of the best made TV you're going to ever see, it's probably also one of the most important bits of entertainment you're going to see this year.
Yeah, no, I agree.
There's a reason they're saying you everybody should see this and it should be taught in schools. Fully 110% agree.
Speaking of things that should be taught in school, I finished the new Daredevil series. It was pretty great. I really enjoyed it.
Is all of it out now?
There's 6 episodes.
Okay. So there's still 3. No, there's 3 more. There's 3 more.
Wait.
Somebody told me it was over.
No, there's 9 episodes.
Oh, even better.
Yeah.
I was going to say there's no way it's ended on that fucking cliffhanger.
No. There's 3 more episodes.
Okay, cool.
9 total.
All right. I'm happy.
What was the last thing that happened?
He fought the dude in the sewer.
Yeah, there's 9 episodes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, thank you, Steve.
Yeah.
So one of my friends was a liar. I have to.
Yeah, no. There's nine episodes.
Gonna have to kill him now.
It's very, very good. It's really so good.
Yeah. And do you see what I'm saying? That Vincent D'Onofrio is going for his Emmy this time.
Yeah.
He is so damn good in it.
We talked about this. Like Dan and I had a conversation about how this I think it's probably the best thing that Marvel has put out in a couple of years, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Because
they've been like on the downswing. And the thing is they're gonna
I like Loki season 2 a lot though. But that's just me. I like weird shit.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I've gone cold on Loki. But not to say that season 2 is not good. It's just not for me. You can just see the writing on the wall that they're gonna try to try to copy this magic. To transfer it to their movies and their other shows, and it's not going to work because they don't understand why it fucking works. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It fucking works because you have a really, really talented cast and a really, really great storytellers telling a really interesting adult story that's not about the end of the world and some magical powers and whatever mm-hmm. other bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Plus, Steve likes Loki and we all like Daredevil. There's 2 people who work on both of those shows who I think are pretty damn good.
You think?
Yeah. Maybe hire Benson and Moorhead for everything.
Make them the heads of the studio, guys.
That'll work.
No doubt.
Listen, they gave the DC to that other dude.
Yeah. James Gunn.
I've also done shots with them in the highball at the Alamo Drafthouse South Lamar. So
fuck yeah.
They're pretty cool guys. So
yeah. Hell yeah.
But the Severance finale was good, but not great. The next season is going to be very strange, I think. I think they're switching it up. Should be interesting. I'm the only person that doesn't like The Pit. Maybe I'm just weird. I was just kind of bored by the first episode and didn't watch any more of it. Maybe I'm just weird. White Lotus was really boring until somebody showed up and did a little monologue, and then the show became incredible.
And that monologue, like that entire exchange, Dan just looked at me like, did this just really happen? I'm like, yeah, no kidding, eh?
The look on Walton Goggins' face will be burned in my memory forever.
Yeah, I think that was the look on all of our faces when he was having that discussion.
Yeah.
And, I really love that show, and I particularly love the 3 women. They're just the epitome of female friendship. Like, I can so relate.
I love how Carrie Coon just like randomly starts crying all the time. It's so good.
But this is such the reality of like women who kind of like each other but kind of don't, and are all like of a certain age, but they all have different life experiences. And like the undercutting is so real.
Yeah.
It's just a little painfully real, too real.
And my last little thing for TV, I like to watch a lot of garbage TV, and I've been watching Australian Survivor this year. And it's pretty great. I'm not going to lie. I'm not a big fan of American Survivor because it's kind of lost its charm. It's all just kind of the same thing. The Australians are kind of ruthless and don't give a fuck what they do to each other. It's quite great. Yeah, I recommend it. I think it's on Paramount.
We keep seeing the ad for that reality show where the I think it's kind of a ripoff of Alone, where the people are in the jungle, the wilderness, and the families are in the control booth, and they can push the button to rescue their family member at any time.
Oh.
Can you imagine being the guy that like is in the wilderness and you're having a really bad night, but your family decides that I think they've had enough, let's pull them out. And then you have to deal with that for the rest of your life. I think the aftermath.
Really mean. Speaking of mean, the first episode of Australian Survivor, the host guy is like, I don't think I'm gonna give you fire. You guys can just figure it out. And they're all like, what? How are we going to cook? He's like, not my problem. So it's like, shit.
Are they in the outback?
No, they're in Samoa, I think. Yeah. It's pretty cool. I like it. But that's it for me.
I forgot to mention in that Sacramento movie, a really quick role from AJ Mendez.
Wow.
Who... Bill might know as
Mrs. Punk.
Yeah, Mrs. Punk, AJ Lee.
Yeah.
So, wrestling fans unite.
Yeah. Now I get it. Okay. Yeah. Way above me. So I saw a couple of things. I was telling you guys before we started, I fell into this deep abyss of Tubi movies.
This is not going to be good.
Well, I did watch a lot of them. I'm only going to talk about one of them. And it's not even a new one. Mind you, not a lot of stuff on Tubi is new. But besides the point of Tubi, Your Monster, which is on, I think it's on Amazon Prime Video.
Steve, that's the Melissa Barbaro one?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I've heard good stuff. Heard really good stuff.
This movie shocked me. It is so fucking good.
Oh, yes. Good.
It is such a surprise. It's a sort of play on Beauty and the Beast. She is this very beautiful young woman who is trying to make it in show business, specifically. She's in musical theater. So she has this relationship with this really dickwad of a director who is just using her. So stuff happens. She is supposed to be in a play. He decides that he's going to cast his new girlfriend instead. Things go sideways. All along, you have this guy that's been this monster that's been living in her mother's house. It's very convoluted. It all comes together in the end. There is this, the most glorious musical performance where she's covered in blood. Because they've just killed the douchebag director. It is so good. I cannot believe how good this movie is. It should be really, really terrible because it's very dramatic and over the top, but it is chef's kiss. It is. It actually works.
I like Melissa Barbaro.
She's great. Really sing.
That's awesome. And especially ever since she got fucking canceled by Hollywood. Anytime I see her in something, I want to support it. Abigail's great.
Yeah.
Great film.
I agree.
Everything I've seen her in besides Scream movies are great. And I enjoy her in the Scream movies. I like the Carpenter sisters, and I'm sad that they're now pivoting into like a weird direction, I guess. Because I don't know. Can Kevin Williamson pull it off? I don't know.
Who knows? But I mean, this looks terrible. Like, you just see the poster is silly. The write-up is ridiculous, but it is legitimately good. Cool. I highly recommend it. I had a lot of fun with it, way better than I had anticipated. And then my back-to-back Canadian content, guys.
Yes.
Representing. You Can Live Forever, which is streaming on CBC Gem. This directed by Sarah Watts and Mark Stoltzky. It's about a young woman who her mother is going through a difficult time. So she is shipped off to her aunt's house, and her aunt lives in rural Quebec in a town that is largely predominantly Jehovah's Witness. And her aunt is a Jehovah's Witness. The girl also happens to be gay. And so she basically shows up at her aunt's house. It's the 90s, I guess, the mid 90s. And she's going through things. She's a teenager and she meets another girl and they have a relationship because that's what happens. It's really good. It's very low key, really great performances. Anwen Odeskrol, who plays the lead, she reminded me a lot of Kristen Stewart, but I think a lot of it is the glasses, the hair, and the fact that she bites her lip in the same way, which is a weird thing to say, but this is the reality of it. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty decent. And it's streaming for free on CBC Gem. And then the one you will know, Steve, is Scarborough.
Yeah.
Which broke my heart.
It's a really, really solid one.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's almost Florida Project-like.
Did I see that at VIFF?
In a way.
Probably.
Yeah, yeah. That's familiar. You
might have. So it's about, very
kid-centric, though.
Yeah, very, very kid-centric. So it follows three young kids who all sort of, their stories are all interconnected by an after-school program or a preschool program that they go to every day. The kids are spectacular. The performances are so good. The movie is a little on the long side. It's just over 2 hours long, but holy shit, it flies. It's so well cut, so powerful, really well performed, like great performances all around. And the woman that plays the teacher, Aliyah Karani, is heartbreaking. And those fucking emails are just so real and so authentic. You just can just imagine the school person just dishing this out. And then when she shows up, you just want to punch her face. Really, really good.
That final scene too.
It's amazing. Really highly recommended. It's streaming on Paramount Plus. It's excellent.
Hey, Marina, stop stealing my shtick.
Sorry.
I forgot my Canadian film. I teased one as well. And I totally forgot about it. And it actually piggybacks a little bit on something Bill was talking about, being Severance. Because I checked out a film called Darkest Miriam, which stars Britt Lower from Severance. And Sukyun Lee is actually in this movie, too.
Wow.
But it's from a director named Naomi Jay. And I dug this film. Like, basically, Britt Lower plays like kind of like a recluse that has some grief caused like PTSD, and just kind of lives a very solitary life. Reading in the park every now and then, and she comes across another loner, and the two start a relationship, like a sexual relationship. But once that starts, she gets some like weird letters kind of sent to her, and it kind of goes in a little bit of a dark direction. Britt Lower is fucking phenomenal. Like, if it isn't already obvious in Severance, she just kind of continues it here. Some really great stuff from her. So she's a real star in the making for sure, and she seems to be taking it all quite well too.
The director is Naomi Jay.
Yeah.
Any relation to Violent J of the Insane Clown Posse?
No, different spelling. Different spelling.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, that's the difference there.
Yeah, I do like going chicken hunting.
Yeah.
Love me some Insane Clown Posse when I'm drunk.
Right? Only when you're drunk.
When you're like past the fago.
Yeah, pretty much. I actually saw Insane Clown Posse live, and I think I still have Fago on me. It was disgusting. the entire audience was just covered in it.
It's just nasty. Yeah. A nasty pop. A nasty American pop. Ugh.
The things you do in the early 2000s.
Right?
Wow.
Yeah. But sorry, Marina. I totally...
No, that's totally fine. Totally fine. If I spur any other reminders of movies, jump in anytime. My one to be title for this episode is Phenomena, the Dario Argento.
Oh yeah. Yes. I covered this for my the horror podcast.
That's Jennifer Connelly.
That's right? Jennifer Connelly.
I watched it.
And Dario was creepy with her. And you can tell in the making of this movie too. He's so creepy with a young Jennifer Connelly.
I have a weird question. Which version of it was it?
Okay, so this is what I was going to ask. Because I watched, I'm sure, what is the recommended version in dubbed Italian.
Okay.
Which is the version that's on TV.
Okay.
And it was very awkward.
I think the Shudder one's the better one.
Probably. I mean, I assume so. I honestly, this was not on my must watch, but it came up in, I read something recently on the trajectory of Jennifer Connelly's career. And I was like, oh, she wasn't in an Argento movie. The potential for this movie is so there. And then it just goes, it's even weirder than most Argento movies.
Like most Argento movies, they go, it goes weird. Like,
but this one seems to go weirder.
Well, it derails. Like, people love Deep Red so much, but that just movie just goes too fucking bonkers for me. And I'm just like, okay, man. Like, now it's nonsense, right? So,
I mean, like, this is such a weird, movie. It's so weird. It's
gross and squirmy, too. It's wormiest, buggiest movie he's ever done.
Oh, well, she talks to fucking insects. Like, the dumbest thing ever.
And who is Daria Nicolodi in that one, too? I think she's she's somebody prominent in that. Because, of course, she's got to be a big role in every movie that he did.
It's strange. And then, of course, you have those crazy dream sequences set to Motorhead and Iron Maiden. And I was what planet am I on? This is the strangest
Dario's planet.
Apparently.
Planet Argento.
It's so strange.
It's weird, and everyone wears black gloves.
Yeah, it's just the strangest movie. There's just no other way to explain it. Jennifer Connelly is such like a sweet-faced angel.
OG crush for Steve Stebbing.
God. She's wonderful. The movie
Career just, Opportunities.
That was a life-changing film.
Oh, is that another one I need to watch? Because I'm kind of on the bandwagon.
Her and Frank Wally.
There's a certain scene in Career Opportunities that,
Okay, I'm adding it to my watch list as we speak, guys.
We have become a man.
Yes.
It's happening. All that to say, it's just the strangest movie.
Also, just so I don't sound like a complete freak, she was also incredibly good looking in the new Top Gun movie. So,
She still continued to be.
She's wonderful. She's wonderful. This is just like the strangest, like oddball of movies. It's bizarre. Continuing with bizarreness, I randomly noticed while I was flickering through Netflix the other day that I hadn't seen Allegiant. You guys remember the Divergent movies? Steve, you might not remember them, but I'm sure Bill does.
They're terrible.
Because Bill is into the YA craziness like I am. And then I remembered I haven't seen Allegiant. So instead of starting just there, I'm like, well, it's been a while. Maybe I'll rewatch the entire franchise.
Oh, my God.
I don't regret it. They're not great, but they're also not terrible. But I have to say, I have forgotten the amount of people of superstars that are in this movie today. Like, it's shocking. Like, Miles Teller shows up, and I'm like, what the fuck? I forgot he was in this. Zoe Kravitz is in this. And then by the time you get to the third movie, fucking everybody, like all of Hollywood is in these movies. Mm-hmm. They should have been better. Because I really like these books. This franchise is actually a good like series. I don't know how it went so bad so fast.
Like, Miles Teller's in the movies, but he's fucking useless in all of the movies.
But everybody's useless.
Everybody comes in, says a line, leaves. Like it's just like... Kate Winslet is the villain. Was that the last movie?
Yeah.
Where Kate Winslet comes in the villain. Arguably the worst thing Kate Winslet has ever done in her career.
Probably. But she got paid, I'm sure.
Oh,
I'm sure.
Handsomely, for sure.
I am fairly certain it was the first time that I saw Theo James, though. And I still remember the first time I saw Theo James. I knew he was going places, okay? Let's just say that.
You and Chloe should talk.
We have thoughts, do we?
Yeah. You guys both have very positive thoughts about these Divergent movies.
Okay, well, I didn't say the movies were good. Let's be clear here.
But about Theo James in general in these movies.
Well, he is the best part of the movies, and not because of his acting ability.
What makes you think you could talk to me?
I remember that I discovered he was English, and it was all that much better. And then a double hit of documentaries on Netflix, which It's usually not a good thing, but in this case, that's actually is a good thing. So the first is The Twister Caught in the Storm, which is a documentary about the tornado that hit through Joplin, Missouri in 2011. And it's mostly, the documentary is mostly cut from like live, like actual footage from the event. And it is crazy. Like at this point, we've seen like Twister movies and we've seen a bunch of documentaries and we know all about how devastating tornadoes are. But there is something about grainy camera footage from what feels like an eternity ago that really puts you in the moment.
Please tell me it was narrated by Glenn Powell.
It was not, but it's missed opportunity. But it is actually like a really solidly put together documentary. Like it is, they have, it's directed by Alexandra Lacey. She speaks with folks that survived the incident. She talks to folks that took some of that footage. It's really well edited and put together. And it's really solid. Like I was really taken by it. I thought it was going to be like this kind of just like play in the background sort of documentary. And I was really engrossed by it. I thought it was really, really good. And then the other one is Con Mum, which is the craziest story that sounds like catfishing, like on crack. So this is the real life story of Graham Horningold, who is a Michelin star pastry chef, British. He was going through some things at the time. He was he's estranged from his mother, adopted into an English family, born in Germany on like a military base. Some woman contacts him saying that she's his long lost mother. He thinks he's being played, so he tests her for knowledge. Turns out it really is his mother, but she takes him on the wildest ride. And it is another case of parents can be really, really horrible human beings. Like she basically bankrupts him. And he's like, I can't believe it. This really, like he, at the, in the end of the day, he actually had like a blood test done. He's like, and she really is my mother. Like she played me, took me for all my money. And at the end of the day, I still have to call her my mother because she actually is my blood relative. It's crazy. It's insane. It's worth checking out. It's pretty good. And that's all I have. I have lots of Tubi horror stories, but they're not for here. Look for them on Letterboxd. That and my observation of how awesome Carrie Russell's hair was. So I watched a bunch of movies with her.
Nice.
Did you watch Hundreds of Beavers?
Fuck no. They've been trying to sell me on that movie since like September of last year when they sent me Oscar consideration and I looked at the trailer and I'm like, no. So no.
Okay.
No interest. Am I missing something? Is it?
No, awesome? I'm not a fan of it either. Everybody okay. seems to love it, but it drove me nuts.
No, I can't be bothered. Can't be bothered. All right. That was a lot of movies, guys.
That's a lot. Yeah.
We made up for last time.
Yeah. Well, let's cruise through to the finish line here.
Let's cruise through. What are our choices? I think I know what our choices. Well, what my pick would be if it's
Drop? Coming
out when I think it is.
Drop?
No, there's a better one. There's a better one. Hey, everybody. I don't think I'm going to see the Minecraft movie. How about you?
I have a kid that is Minecraft obsessed and has been waiting for this one. So also stay tuned for Hannah's review on what the hell should I watch? It'll be a video essay review.
Nice. That's going to be good. I can't wait for that. Freaky Tales. Steve saw it. Said it was decent.
Yep.
I want to see it. This one I'd never heard of, but I'm just going to say it because of the director. Hell of a Summer. You guys ever heard of this one?
Yeah, this is the Finn Wolfhard movie.
Yeah,
the trailer looks fun, actually.
Yeah.
It's Fred Hechinger as a guy that's too old to go to camp that keeps going back to camp all the time. And of course, he's the red herring to be a serial killer when kids start getting picked off. This movie looks fun. Yeah, I'm totally down. I don't know if we'll get it here, though, but I can't wait. I'm excited for it.
There's a bunch of other direct-to-video stuff that week, but I'm not going to say it. The next week, April 11th, The Amateur with Rami Malek.
Oh, right. That movie. It looks so bland.
Not the movie I want to see on April 11th.
No. Why doesn't this star Ben Affleck? Like, This just feels like a Ben Affleck movie to me. I don't know why.
It does.
Yeah, it looks really boring. I don't really care about that one at all. Drop, which played South by Southwest, and some friends of mine saw and said it's decent. It's a fun ride. I hope
it is. I like the writing team on it. It's same guy. It's Christopher Landon and Michael Kennedy, I believe. Yeah. So.
And I just saw Brandon Skenlar on I've been watching
1923.
And he is
I think he's one of the next big stars to come, actually. I think
he's a very handsome looking guy.
He's the next Glenn Powell for sure.
I could go with that. He's one, very handsome.
One thing about Melissa not being here is we don't get her update on Yellowstone.
She's done Yellowstone though. She's
in 1923 now. She just finished 1923 or whatever. So is there another show for her to watch?
No.
Unless we're going to push Mayor of Kingstown on her and keep down the whole Taylor Sheridan wheelhouse.
Dan and I just started catching, because we had watched the first season of 1923 and then we'd fallen off for season two and we've just caught up, and it's pretty good season, gotta say.
Yeah, I'm liking season two a lot more than season one, actually.
Fully agree.
I was so sick of the Africa stuff
back to the West.
Yeah. And like also the mid season one, you have the shock of like, fuck, is everybody dead?
Of course.
Yeah. So
sorry, Bill, totally derailed us.
Oh, all good. Sorry. I brought it up. Sacramento opens, you guys.
Yeah. That? It's a great film. I really enjoyed it.
Ballad of Wallace Island opens in Canada.
Oh, so nice. We'll
get to see that. Nice. I really want to see that movie.
And the movie I kind of want to see, Warframe.
Warfare is the one that I would pick as our movie. Yeah,
Alex Garland and Ray Mendoza directing. Yeah. Mendoza's an ex.
And that cast, Charles Melton, Joseph Quinn. The kid from Reservation Dogs.
Yeah.
Just this cast is just like chef's kiss.
I just can't believe that, like, for years it's been like the wait between Alex Garland movies, it's like 5, 6, 7 years, and we are blessed to have back to back.
Well, it just means he also trolled us so hard in the press after Civil War, because he said he was done making films.
But I mean, it kind of makes sense, because it sounds like Warfare came out of the work that he was doing with Mendoza on Civil War.
Yeah.
But yeah, it looks spectacular. I already told Dan we're going. The IMAX tickets are going to get purchased. Biggest screen, biggest sound. Garland is a genius.
Yeah, I would love for that to be the pick. What's the other big release on the 11th besides Drop?
Amateur.
It's going to be one of those three that I'll get to see that weekend, being in a small town market.
Unless maybe you get a screener of Ballad of Wallace Island.
Yes, if I get one of those, let's do that movie, because that one's going to warm my heart. And after Bob Trevino, I think we should have two in a row of really nice movies, I think.
I can,
like,
go with
movies that make you feel good and make you feel like you're getting over some kind of trauma in your life. It could be a good theme.
Yeah, those movies are better than last time. And the show after, the first week that we come back, we got Sinners. Ooh. And new Cronenberg, so that's something to look forward to.
Ooh, oh, I hope it's better than last Cronenberg.
True.
Oh,
hey, Shroud is part of the Canada's top 10.
What, you don't want to sit in your high chair?
That's not saying a lot, dude.
You don't want to sit in your high chair and eat plastic? Whatever.
Yeah, not the best film. So yeah, I say the Garland, that'd be good for me, but we'll see.
We can circle back. We can
TBA. TBA.
Yeah.
As much as I kind of want to know Melissa's thought on Minecraft, but
One I'm for sure seeing.
Oh goodness. I'll probably end up seeing that. Maybe. It depends on when
it's
the
video. Jared Hess. It's Jared Hess that made it.
But it looks so bad.
Yeah, well, and like you got to remember, he made Masterminds, but at the same time, I've been showing the scene for Masterminds because it's like the only real funny part of the movie, which is like a photo shoot scene between Zach Galifianakis and Kate McKinnon. That's just fucking hysterically funny. It's
I don't actually the best know if part I've of the whole that.
Movie. Yeah, Kristen Wiig's in it, and it's everybody with weird haircuts because it's a Jared Hess movie.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be funny if someone had a weird haircut?
Yeah, I don't think I've seen this. I'll probably shouldn't see this either.
Yeah, another one for the list.
No thanks. No thanks. Well, anything else, guys, before we wrap this? We put a bow on this one. It's been a good show.
Yeah, I know.
We were mostly on track and everything.
Exactly. Other than this Marina was right. This summer's blackberry cider is pretty good, I must say.
It's hitting.
Yeah,
they're decent. Like Summersbee ones are very nice. I think the only one I didn't like was the pear. Not a fan of the pear.
Ew.
But the rest is quite nice. I usually get the mixed pack, and they tend to be pretty good. The pear I didn't care for, but not bad. The soju, just to report back, since we're doing that, the soju is great. Almost done.
And how is your iced tea, Steve?
Empty for a while now.
We've talked for too long.
Yeah, I'm getting dry, guys.
All right, let's wrap this thing up. Until the next episode, where can folks find you?
All right, I am Bill Harris. I am on Blue Sky at That Bill Harris, and on Letterboxd, which I still do wrong, at SoundJam69. Take it away, Marina.
Marina, you can find me on Blue Sky at the Marina, which I don't really regularly post to. And you can also find me on Letterboxd at the Marina. I tried to do it right. And I tried to stay up to date. I also try to be sneaky because otherwise Bill is looking and then he knows how I feel about things. And it's not as much fun on the show. The only thing I use Instagram for now is to share my record collection. So what do I know?
Hey, I think I've been rather nice about people's Letterboxd accounts. You want me to go back to the old Bill? Come on.
No, I love the old Bill. I love the old Bill who digs up all the shitty things we've been watching. Which I watch a lot of. Because like I keep mentioning, I watch a lot of Tubi, guys. And last but definitely not least, Mr. Steve.
If there's a social media function, just look up the Steeble Dead. You'll find me there. I'm also, you can find my website, stevestebbing.ca. On there, I do a show every week at Friday, 9 a.m. Pacific time, called What the Hell Should I Watch? With my daughter, Chloe. I'm also on Tremble with Kurt and Taylor, our latest two episodes. We did vampire films or quasi-vampire films. We did Life Force. From Toby Hooper.
I love that movie, actually. Oh, my God. It's so good.
With a naked 18-year-old Matilda May.
Oh, yeah.
There's some creepy stories of the bad, like arguments about her pubic hair and shit. Like, it's okay, crazy.
That's creepy.
It is super, super creepy. Toby Hooper
rules.
He was
I don't know. The first time I saw that movie, I was like, nobody told me there were energy vampires. This is amazing. I was very impressed.
Then it's a zombie movie too.
Yeah. Well.
And then the second one we did is The Hunger. Tony Scott's debut film.
Catherine Deneuve.
Right. Tony Scott. David Bowie for just like the first like what 25 minutes or so.
Yeah.
The film opens with Bauhaus's Bela Lugosi is dead. Like the movie moves like in this gothic music video, and I love it. And yeah, Catherine Deneuve is like the hottest thing on earth in that movie. She's just so great in the style of that film. Needless to say, I give it all a near perfect review on that one. But you can also check me out every Friday 8 p.m. Eastern time on Shane Hewitt and the Night Shift. They're on Toronto's News Talk 1010, which is found on the iHeartRadio network. And yeah, that's it.
Awesome. Until the next time, you can find links to all of the things we talked about today at atcpod.ca. And until next time.
Hack the planet. Yeah.